It's the Friday edition of the Large Morning Show in the afternoon on the Big 550 KTRS. I am Paul Harris. Ian and Dan and Tim are here with me, and so is Max, joining us for the showbiz segment of the show. Hi, Max. How are you?
Hello there, Paul. I'm doing fantastic. Thanks.
Yeah, good to see you again.
Good to see you as well.
It's nice to be any place that's air-conditioned on a day like today, isn't
it? It's true. It is far too hot outside.
So we've got a couple of movies that are opening in theaters today. One of them is the new Spider-Man movie, which we will get to second. I'm going to make people wait for the Spider-Man review because I have been bursting with excitement to review this next movie since I saw it 2 weeks ago.
It's a film that I've heard not one negative comment about from anyone.
And you're not going to hear one today from me. The movie is called The Big Sick, and I will cut to the chase. It's the best movie I've seen this year. It's a romantic comedy that's based on the lives of Kumail Nanjiani, who you may know if you've ever watched the HBO series Silicon Valley, and Emily Gordon. The two of them co-wrote the movie. In the movie, Kumail Nanjiani plays himself, and Zoe Kazan plays Emily Gordon, and their chemistry on screen is absolutely wonderful. They start off with a nice start to the relationship. He's a stand-up comedian in real life and in the movie, so the stand-up comedy scenes work. Remember how I've talked about that so many times this year about how they don't when actors do it? But when stand-ups do it, it works. And she laughs loudly at something that he says on stage, and it gets his attention, and they have some banter back and forth from stage to audience. And then later on, they meet, and it's obvious that they're having some chemistry there. So that gets them off to a nice start, and then they hit a rough patch. And then the relationship enters unforeseen territory when Emily gets mysteriously sick and has to be put into a medically induced coma. Now, I am not spoiling anything about the movie because that is the bottom line on this movie. Relationship that runs into this medically induced coma situation. So Kumail goes to the hospital to check on this woman that he's obviously grown very fond of, and he encounters her parents, who are played in the movie by Holly Hunter and Ray Romano, who at first don't know why he's there or what to make of him. And meanwhile, we also get to meet Kumail's parents because he goes to dinner at their house with his brother and his sister and his parents. And every time he's there, a Pakistani woman, he's Pakistani, his family's Pakistani, a Pakistani woman just happens to drop by because his wife, his mom is trying to set him up in an arranged marriage, just like she had had with her husband. And so there are very funny scenes with them. And there are wonderful scenes and wonderful chemistry between him and Holly Hunter and Ray Romano. And we do get to see some scenes of him plying his trade as a comedian in Chicago. And we also have other people who have done that, like A.D. Bryant, who is now on Saturday Night Live, and Bo Burnham, who's had a couple of Netflix specials, and another guy named Kurt Brownoler, who I didn't know anything about. They are all people who've had experience in and around real comedy clubs, and so it works on stage. Now, if you don't know Kumail Nanjiani, he is a guy who has a very dry wit and very dry delivery, particularly on Silicon Valley and in his stand-up as well. And it comes through in the script, and this script crackles every time he's on screen, which is for most of the movie. I laughed out loud several times, a couple of dozen times, in fact. That's how funny it is. But I'm going to have to watch it again because I saw it with a large crowd at a screening where people were laughing so much, I missed the next line or two because people were enjoying the movie so much. Now, I cannot imagine how difficult it must have been for Kumail and Emily to go through this situation in the first place, be so sick that they had to put you into a medically induced coma, and then to say to each other, you know what? This is a comedy. What? A medically induced coma comedy? And then they had to write that script and relive it, and then he has to act it out, and she has to watch him acting that out because she's on the set
with
all the time
woman,
while he's doing that with Zoe Kazan and having sex scenes with her. So it seems like a very odd way to come up with a romantic comedy plot, but it works. And I'm telling you right now, this is warm, it's honest, it's clever, it's funny. It's going to be on my best of 2017 list.
Nice.
In fact, it's likely to be at the top because I did not find anything wrong with this movie, even though, as sometimes happens when Judd Apatow produces, which he did this one, and his name's all over it.
So wait a minute, it's not a half an hour too long?
It's 2 hours long. Most Judd Apatow movies are like 220, 230, mm-hmm. and those you can cut 20 or 30 minutes from. This one's 2 hours long, but it never limps along. Nothing seems extraneous, and that's why I'm giving The Big Sick a perfect 10 out of 10.
Whoa!
Look at that.
Not only that, I'm going to predict that Holly Hunter gets an Oscar nomination for Best Supporting Actress.
Wow!
And I predict that Nanjiani and Gordon, Kumail and Emily, who wrote the script, they will get an Oscar nomination.
Original screenplay.
For original screenplay. It's that good. Now, comedies don't do that well at the Oscars, so they won't be up for Best Picture. But for me, this is the best picture of 2017. It's called The Big Sick.
I was reading something on Twitter about how they were saying that one of their biggest inspirations was Four Weddings and a Funeral, the mm-hmm. movie from Richard Curtis,
mm-hmm.
and how you know they loved Hugh Grant in that movie, and they were kind of trying to pace their script alongside that one,
yeah.
and how they met Richard Curtis at some award show, and he actually, upon hearing they were making this movie and writing it, and he gave them his blessing, and he sent them film strips, like film negatives from Four Weddings as mm-hmm. like a congratulations on making this movie,
wow.
which is just incredible.
Yeah.
So.
Is this wide release?
It is in wide release. It's not just, it's one of those movies that you would think, well, that's just going to play at the Tivoli or at the Plaza Frontenac. It's playing in a lot of places, and it's out there. It's a great date movie. It's a great couples movie. It's a great movie. It's called The Big Sick. I thought Hidden Figures was going to be my number one movie of the year.
Mm-hmm.
I think this one may slide past it because that only got a 9.5.
Whoa.
This one gets a 10. All right, now let's move on to the big release movie, the one that's going to be in 3,500 screens
sure,
across the country.
Sure, the one that will make $100 million this weekend.
Is it going to do better than Wonder Woman?
I think it'll open stronger, sure, because people are more familiar with Spider-Man. I mean, they've had, five earlier movies to get a handle on this character. So,
mm-hmm.
Although I think that might actually hurt the movie as well, because as good as Spider-Man Homecoming is, and it is good,
yeah.
I think general audiences have a bit of Spidey fatigue. And this is because back in 2002, before the Marvel Cinematic Universe rolled out with Iron Man and all these giant movies, Sony made a Spider-Man movie directed by Sam Raimi with Tobey Maguire. There was a huge hit. Mm-hmm. It was a giant hit. It came out the same year as the second Star Wars prequel and actually did better than that movie. It was followed up with a sequel, Spider-Man 2, with Alfred Molina as Dr. Octopus, that is still held in high regard. People call it one of the best superhero films ever.
You know what wasn't one of the best superhero films ever?
What's that?
The third one.
True. The third one where the studio says, you know, let's have Venom in there, and let's do this, and let's do this, and Raimi sort of lost control, and it didn't do very well, and fans turned against it. And so Raimi had plans to do a fourth movie with the villain, the Vulture, and actually signed John Malkovich to play the Vulture
Ooh,
in that
gonna
movie.
He's going to be a good villain, sure.
Absolutely, and he was going to bring it back to basics. And Sony sort of balked and said, we don't know, the fans didn't like that third one, you're fired, you're out, and they dismissed everybody. In the meantime, Marvel launches their own cinematic universe. They've got Iron Man, they've got Thor, they've got Hulk, they've got Captain America. They're leading up to the Avengers. They come knocking on Sony's door. They want Spider-Man back. Sony goes, why would we ever do that? We're going to make all the money in the world. No, we're not going to give him back to you. And so they reboot the whole franchise with Andrew Garfield. Well, they made a huge mistake with that film because they decided to retell the origin we had just seen
yes.
about 5 years earlier.
Yes.
There was no reason to do that. So this franchise never got a chance to be its own animal because it just completely was a retread of that first franchise.
Right.
It was a bad, bad movie with a bad performance from Andrew Garfield.
And a bad sequel.
Well, an even worse sequel. And just like Spider-Man 3 was bad, The Amazing Spider-Man 2 was even worse. It's dreadful. It's joyless. It's sour and dour. I hated that movie, and I grew up reading Spider-Man comics. Spider-Man is a really important character to me, the nerd, and they've never really gotten them right. And so, yes, I understand the fatigue with Spider-Man. Like, okay, this is the sixth time we've seen him on screen. Roll your eyes. But I think what's different is Sony, with their tail tucked between their legs, went over to Marvel and said, okay, let's work out a deal. We still want to have some rights to this franchise, but you can be in control and give us a story, and we'll produce it. And what Sony got out of it was they were able to have Iron Man, Robert Downey Jr., and a couple of other characters that I won't spoil show up. And then now this character is a part of the Marvel movies that we've been watching since 2008. What this does is, for the first time, it gives us a great picture with Peter Parker, a 15-year-old kid who has no idea what he's doing, and a hero who's not really a developed hero yet. These are the stories that I enjoyed reading when I was growing up. Mm-hmm. We've never had them. And so for the first time, we have Spider-Man like the Spider-Man that we all grew up reading. If you are a huge nerd, you're going to be really excited about that fact. If you're not, and if you're like, oh, another Spider-Man movie, I don't know. You don't have to know anything about the character. They're not going to retread any kind of origin. All you have to go do is have fun, mm-hmm. because this is a very fun movie. It was actually co-written by one of the stars of Freaks and Geeks, speaking of Judd Apatow. And he's become a screenwriter now, and he really infuses this with a very John Hughes kind of vibe. It really does feel like an old 1980s picture. There's great musical cues, everything from the Rolling Stones to English Beat. It's a very fun movie, too. And if you think about the last five Spider-Man movies, they've really tried to go into the pathos of Peter Parker and woe is me and I can't make my rent. And his struggle is a big part of that character, but he also has fun. And it can be at times a lighthearted book. We finally have a lighthearted Spider-Man film. So I'm sort of two minds about this movie. I really enjoyed it. I think it's a whole lot of fun. It's light as a feather. But it's also the sixth time we've seen the character. Mm-hmm. So it's a little hard for me to come on the air and say, I'm really recommending this. Please go see it. It's one of the best films of the summer. I could say that about Wonder Woman, because we'd never had a big screen Wonder Woman film.
Right.
And so if you're going to compare the two most recent superhero films, I'd still rank Wonder Woman ahead of Homecoming, because we've seen Spider-Man a lot. But I guess what I'm saying is we've never seen him this good and portrayed this well.
Okay.
I am giving it a positive review.
All right. Let me just jump in here and add one thing that you left out. Anytime you have a superhero movie or a super spy movie, you need a super villain. And you need a super actor to play that super villain. That's why if you go back to the first Batman movie, Jack Nicholson had a much better part than Michael Keaton did in that movie.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, Michael Keaton plays the villain in this. He plays the Vulture.
Yes, from Batman to Birdman to Vulture.
To Spider-Man.
Yes.
And Michael Keaton is so good in this. I'm so glad to hear and see him having this career renaissance,
yes.
of the last few years. Mm-hmm. I thought The Founder earlier this year was a
great.
Terrific movie.
Yeah.
Everything he does has that little touch of realism on the edge of madness.
I'm glad that you brought him up, because a lot of reviewers that I'm skimming here on Twitter, they're not really mentioning Vulture. They're not mentioning Michael Keaton.
He makes the movie.
He does make the movie. And if you think about it, all the Marvel villains, they're probably the weakest part in all the Marvel films. You've really only had Loki be a really good villain. Other than that, there's really nobody else that you can point to. They're all forgettable. And in the Spider-Man films, the same way. Green Goblin, Sandman, Venom, nobody cares. Dr. Octopus, Alfred Molina, did a great job. This is the best villain since then, because his motivations, which I won't spoil here, are realistic.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that he plays a couple of those scenes at the end, which again I won't spoil, are fantastic. Also, the suit is great. I mean, you feel the weight of this Vulture costume, and you know the talons and the wings. It's really well done.
Yep.
Is this a true story?
It's based on.
Oh, okay.
Based on a true story.
Peter Parker's a friend of mine. I could call him right now. I just don't want to.
Wow.
We haven't even mentioned the name of the kid who plays Peter Parker Spider-Man. His name is Tom Hammond.
Holland.
Holland.
Yeah.
We should also mention that Robert Downey Jr. does show up in the movie.
He does.
As Tony Stark, who's the mentor to this character.
Did you wait till the end credits? Did you stay through the entire credits?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
Because somebody there had the after credits app and was looking at it before the movie started and said, oh, there's something that you're supposed to stay around for.
I actually really liked the very end credit scene. I thought it was one of the more clever things that they've done.
I agree. And I also can't let us finish this review of this movie without mentioning Marissa Tomei.
Aunt May.
Holy cow.
You've never seen Aunt May like this.
Marissa Tomei is
not 90.
Marissa Tomei is 52 years old and still absolutely gorgeous and still great on screen. What charisma this woman has, and presence and chemistry with everybody that she encounters on screen. It's great.
So not being a big comic book nerd like myself,
yes.
Your thoughts going into Homecoming before you watched it, were you sort of like, oh, another Spider-Man, or were you excited?
I was, oh, another Spider-Man.
Okay. Sure.
Now, I did not see the two Andrew Garfields because
good.
Because I said, oh, no, I'm done. Because I saw the first three with Tobey Maguire, and three turned me off from the idea completely.
Sure.
Forever. But not forever ended last week when I saw this at a screening. And
it's fun, right? It's delightful.
It is. I thought it was good. I like the supporting cast. Jon Favreau, Laura Harrier, Zendaya, Donald Glover, Hannibal Buress is very funny in
there. Tony Revioli from the Grand Budapest Hotel is Flash Thompson.
And Bokeem Woodbine, a name I remember because he was on the second season of Fargo on FX. And you don't forget a name like Bokeem Woodbine.
Sure.
He was great on that, and he's very good in this as well. I'm giving it a 7.5 out of 10.
Nice.
And I am not a comic book superhero nerd like you are, so I'm curious what you thought of it.
You know, I'm giving it a solid 8. It would probably be higher for me if we hadn't had the previous 5 films, and also it had Wonder Woman not come out this same year.
Yeah.
So I will give it a solid 8.
I think the high school portions of the story feel a little obvious and kind of flat, but the rest of it pretty good. So, all right, we both liked it a lot.
Good.
Now, I've got 1 minute left for you to throw in your thoughts on Baby Driver, which I reviewed a week or two ago, and thought was okay.
I agree with you. Yeah, it is wonderfully constructed. It's beautifully put together. Edgar Wright is a very talented person, but for all the rest of his movies like Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz, The World's End, and Scott Pilgrim versus the World, this is probably my least favorite of his. So it comes in at the bottom. I would still recommend it, though. It's really well put together. Ansel Elgort is great, and actually he'll be a guest on my show tomorrow night at 10 p.m.
Excellent. So. Okay. Would you agree with me that it seemed like he came up with the soundtrack before he came up with the script?
Absolutely, and I do think the ending is a little long. I didn't need the villain coming back 4 different times.
Yeah.
But other than that,
there was a little Fatal Attraction thing going on there, wasn't there?
I think so. Yeah. I think so, yeah.
Definitely.
You're going to have Al Gore on tomorrow night?
Yes, Al Gore, the creator of the internet, for an Inconvenient Foisy show tomorrow night, 10 o'clock.
You know,
that
you're joking
fabulous.
Around.
Fabulous.
You're joking around, but he does have a movie coming out this summer.
That's
Al
right.
Al Gore?
An Inconvenient sequel.
Yeah.
I think it's coming out in August.
I believe so.
Yeah. That's all the time we have for the Showbiz Show today, because coming up next, Cliff Nesteroff will be here to talk about comedy, which he's got a show about on Viceland TV next week, and then CNN's History of Comedy as well. We'll do that right after this on the Big 550 KTRS.